is All About Jack, a C.S. Lewis podcast, one of the many resources available at EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty, and today I'm sharing an essay chat that was previously released. My guest today is Dr. Bruce Edwards. Back in 2012, when I recorded this conversation, he had not yet left Bowling Green State University in Ohio. He taught there for over 30 years, but is now retired. He has been a guest several times since then, and you can check the show notes for details about that. While an author of several Lewis titles himself, he is also known for being the editor of the four-volume C.S. Lewis Life, Works, and Legacy. Today, the essay discussed is Meditation in a Tool Shed. In a moment, you'll hear some background about the essay, but for those who haven't listened to any of my essay chats before, let me explain that the purpose in doing this is to expose you to an essay by Lewis that you may not have read before, and hopefully as a result of this chat, you will want to read it yourself. Or if you have read it previously, you would be encouraged to read it again. Welcome back to the show, Bruce.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, let's go for the background of the essay. It's, again, Meditation in a Tool Shed. It was first published in the July 17, 1945 issue of the Coventry Evening Telegraph. It's a short piece, not taking more than probably 5 minutes to read it. And of course, you want to, with any Lewis essay though, not just read through it, you want to reflect on it. There's a lot of great stuff here. It is best found in the essay collection entitled God in the Dock. Now, before we started recording, Bruce, you mentioned that this publication is actually still in existence. Is that correct?
That's true. Yeah, it's just a daily newspaper, and I don't know what its circulation is or how popular it was, but certainly in Coventry, it was the record of the day. And what I tend to think about this is it shows Lewis's humility in being able to write for and reach multiple audiences. And I don't know if this was solicited or whether he decided this was the best publication site for what he had to say, but it's kind of remarkable that this world-class scholar would take the time to write and submit this to that editor.
Well, now, briefly, would you mind commenting on Lewis's ability to teach a lesson from what might be considered trivial events like he sets up from his experience in a tool shed?
I think we start with the keen powers of observation that Lewis has, looking at what we consider ordinary or routine things. You know, he's famous for saying he likes monotony, which I interpret not that he likes the routine to the exclusion of more interesting or exciting endeavors and events, but that he kind of sees the value of the ordinary and the habitual. And certainly, in terms of our Christian character, the habitual is a good thing if it means we've, you know, come to have the habit of following Christ and so forth. So I think Lewis is a very patient observer of the everyday. And, you know, of course, mere Christianity, in many ways very philosophical, but also very homely in the images and examples that he chooses, because he understands who his audience is, which are not always, and maybe even especially, the most intellectual giants of a culture or a particular time period, but ordinary folk and people like me and you, I think. And he has a way of registering the everyday that gets our attention, and then he makes the most of what those objects and those incidences and events are to our benefit.
Well, now walk us through his basic observation about the contrast between looking along and looking at something that Lewis had, along with a few of the examples, if you like.
First of all, I would say I know this is not a fictional experience. I can just imagine be in the room with Lewis when he observes this experience of standing in a dark tool shed or any kind of dark, a stairway, anywhere where you come upon the experience of seeing light coming through, and you realize there are two things going on. There's what you see because of the light that it illuminates, even if it's in silhouette, and you see the light itself. And that's what he's saying. I'm in this tool shed, and there's a sunbeam, and I both see what is illuminated by that sunbeam, but I see the sunbeam itself. And then extracts from that the notion that these are two different ways of looking, or two different experiences that yield different data, different levels of investment. So, for instance, looking at the light is kind of the scientific or objective view. It doesn't take any investment or participation of mine I'm observing, and there it is, there's the light. But then what it illuminates, that's looking along. That's looking for the personal and for the investment and participation in the event itself, and in realizing that that comes with it not only possibilities of truth and data that needs to be interpreted, but it may mean that it has emotional attachments. It may mean it has imaginative reach that goes beyond just the simple fact that there's that light. And Lewis makes the most of that in this this essay.
Well, Lewis goes on to ask, you know, which is the true or valid experience, and notes a bias has developed against one to the point that those who talk about it have taken a browbeating. Explain what he meant by this and your view on how the situation is today.
Focus a bit on the examples he uses beyond the tool shed, because in some ways this could have been called meditation in a college classroom or meditation while driving to the sea, because there's just all sorts of personal daily examples that exemplify what he's getting at. He says, this is only a very simple example of the difference between looking at and looking along. A young man meets a girl, the whole world looks different when he sees her. And then he goes on to elaborate upon the experience of knowing or meeting or seeing this girl and how that affects him multidimensional ways. But then a scientist, he says, comes along and describes this young man's experience from the outside. And for him, it's all an affair of the young man's genes and a recognized biological stimulus. As Lewis goes on to pile on the examples, which again is characteristic of Lewis, he wants multiple analogies and metaphors to stretch the reader or the hearer. And he's exemplifying looking at, which typically is aligned with this objective or scientific view that's just the facts, ma'am, so to speak. And then this looking along, which implies much more of a cost of understanding or the cost of investing in knowing this particular circumstance. So whether it's falling in love, whether it's a young girl who loses or has a doll that is broken, or his most exotic example is the savage who dances at midnight before Nyanga, depicted as sort of this pagan god in order to bring the crops. What he's saying is that if we choose in advance to label one or the other the more accurate or the more trustworthy, we're going to miss a lot. In fact, we're going to miss maybe everything about what it means to be human and ultimately what it means to seek after God. But that's not, strictly speaking, his point here, because this is not for an audience of believers. This is an audience of general readers who he's trying to train to see around and through and by various points of view. So he says the at perspective, the scientific, objective, distant, outsider view has dominated, certainly post-Enlightenment and especially in the 20th century, the part of the 20th century that Lewis knew, and that looking along, which is often associated with religion and love and other sort of elusive qualities of life, loyalty, etc., gets short shrift, and it's at the bottom of the taxonomy of what truly truth seekers and intellectual folks do. You start with the science. And Lewis says, well, maybe not. Maybe there are different starting places. Maybe it's a continuum. But we can't let looking at block out or erase what we get from looking along. And I think this is just one of many places Lewis gives us a toolkit for navigating modern life. And it reminds us, sometimes you need science, sometimes you need reason, and then sometimes you need the imagination. Sometimes you need to step out of the objective realm and become a part of the thing you're trying to understand.
And I know one of the things kind of backing up to the earlier part of setting the stage is that for maybe those who are listening who know someone who's not a Christian and they want to share this, that Lewis is quick to admit, I think it's in the seventh paragraph, that the inside can be biased, but mm-hmm. one should not just automatically assume, since that may be having more of a tendency per se, and that's probably an unfair statement, that just because there are examples of biases from the inside that you just totally discount all inside experiences.
Right. And that's important that we see that Lewis acknowledges that, but I think as he says, the specific modern type of thought is dominated by His phrase is the scientific view, or the looking at, and when most of us think of science, we like to think of, boy, there's that car, and I don't understand how it works, but I'm glad it does, and I'm glad I don't have to understand the science behind it. I just turn the key, and I get to go places. The technology part of it, and the parallel to that is sort of the magic of how things work. We can think of science as hardcore hardware technology, or we can also think of it as magic. Somehow, that electricity gets from that place way down south, and yet illuminates my lamp, you know, 1,000 miles away. And, you know, to somebody who doesn't understand the physics of it, which I don't, it seems magical. But the at and along perspectives help us constrain our enthusiasm for the magical, while at the same time opening up the prohibitively scientific view for some appreciation of how we can understand things from our personal and participatory point of view. And I love the way Lewis is opening this up. And I mentioned when we were talking earlier, he's being very coy because in his back pocket is still another way of looking neither at nor along that kind of trumps both perspectives. And that's, to me, revelation, which is perhaps non-rational, not irrational, and provides still a third referee between the two points of view.
Is there any summary of a key notion here that Lewis is expressing, any way to summarize it in a single thought or a sentence?
Well, paraphrasing Lewis, of course, is a cottage business in C.S. Lewis land, and all of us are experts, and we have, you know, websites and publications and so forth. So I'm sure he would be amused to think that things could be reduced enough. But I understand what you're saying, because you want a hook, you want a tag for this, and I think it comes down to this: there's two things operating. One, there is a prevailing orthodoxy which says you start with science and end with science. And Lewis is saying that's not all there is. He has a great phrase that appears in another essay, that reason is the organ of truth, but imagination is the organ of meaning. And both perspectives allow us to apprehend and navigate the world that we're in. And I think that's what this essay does for us. It's sort of a preliminary, it's a primer for understanding that there are at least two perspectives that need to be brought to any event or experience. And then as one learns to deploy these and understand them from inside or outside, there's a search for, or a yearning for, a longing for a third thing, which is, of course, revelation.
Turning now to some brief quotes from the essay, we were chatting beforehand that there are several good ones in this short essay. I know in the final paragraph, for me, I like what he says, that one of the sentences, one must look both along and at everything. And then just at the very end, he says, quote, we must start with no prejudice for or against either kind of looking. What short quotes did you especially like?
Well, I just love the individual examples that are there to sort of extrapolate. And I've often looked at this one. The savage dances in ecstasy at midnight before Nyanga and feels with every muscle that his dance is helping to bring the new green crops and the spring rain and the babies. And then the anthropologist, observing that savage, records he is performing a fertility ritual of the type so-and-so. And in some ways, we could substitute Christianity for dancing at midnight before Nyanga and the communion that we take, that's the body and blood of Jesus, born for our sins. And that same anthropologist would be remarking of that ritual of the type so-and-so. He'd have his taxonomy of classifications. And in classifying that experience, his work would be done. And of course, that's where Lewis would say, but you're just getting started.
Well, now, any related essays that especially stand out in your mind, or books where he talks about the subject?
Well, I would just emphasize one in particular that is not as well known and as popular now as Meditation and Toolshed. And it's sort of buried in a collection that Cambridge University Press brought out, Selected Literary Essays, is the collection. And it's Blue Spells and Philanthropheres, A Semantic Nightmare. And it's one of the more exotic titles of Lewis, because he's usually very prosaic and very literal in his titles, certainly his titling his fiction and books. But this is an essay about meaning and diction and metaphor. It's heavily reflects the influence that Owen Barfield, his friend of 60 years, had with Lewis, that influence. And it's a great defense of how language is incurably metaphorical, but thereby is not inferior to so-called scientific language. And, these two essays, Meditation, this one, they have a lot in common. They descend from a common parent, and that would certainly be worth anybody's time.
Okay, and at the beginning of our talk setting up, I failed to mention that you do have a website called cslewisreview.org. And then additionally, you are the editor for a four-volume set that was mainly aimed at libraries, C.S. Lewis, Life, Works, and Legacy. So Bruce has quite a bit of background with Lewis. We encourage you to check out his website. We'll have the links in the show notes as well as to the book that this essay, Meditation in a Tool Shed, is found. Any final thoughts, Bruce?
I would just thank you for the opportunity to pursue this, and would love to see a discussion evolving out of this on your site and with commentary and maybe further examples. When I teach this essay, I do ask my students to write about a similar kind of experience of where by observing one thing, they end up learning something completely different than they set out to learn. And I think that's what these toolkits that Lewis gives us at and along and reception and use as a literary critic, they open up so many vistas for us that it's really a pleasure to study Lewis.
Ah, yes, it definitely is. And again, this essay, Meditation in a Tool Shed, is best found in the collection God in the Dock. Well, Bruce, thanks for your time.
My pleasure.
Again, thanks for listening to this episode that takes a brief examination at one of the many shorter works by C.S. Lewis. Be sure to stop by EssentialCSLewis.com regularly to find other interviews and essay chats, along with a feature that showcases a fact, quote, and quiz about Lewis each day. Again, that's EssentialCSLewis.com. Or you can locate the audio files directly for the podcast at allaboutjack.podbean.com.